Choice and Control, a podcast celebrating people with disability. In this season, we're talking about access, inclusion, and the National Disability Insurance Scheme. This podcast series is brought to you by Carers Queensland, NDIS local area coordination partner in the community.
Hi, I'm Jodie van der Wettering. Today I'm talking to Rebecca Johnson, a young artist from Rockhampton who's living with bipolar disorder and chronic illness. Despite it being a really rough year, Rebecca's come out on top with some answers about her health and some amazing achievements with her artwork, even the start of a new business.
Originally, I was always interested in music, and so when that kind of became difficult with my physical health, I always found that when I was sick, I would turn to making visual art because it's a lot quieter and not having to deal with, I guess, people watching while I'm doing it. And then that kind of turned into a way of expressing how I was feeling with mental illness and physical illness, and being able to kind of portray how I'm feeling and what I'm thinking in a way that didn't require me to talk.
Now Rebecca's sharing her voice and her vision with more people through her art. She's part of an exhibition run by Carers Queensland we'll find out more about in just a moment, and she also has her artwork on the cover of a 2021 calendar.
It's by Art from the Margins, which is based in Brisbane, and they created the competition for people facing adversity, so it covered everything from mental illness, physical disability, to Indigenous people and people that are living in rural communities. So I entered it with two pieces that kind of spoke about my relationship with my mother and how she has kind of always been the person that I can lean on and that can be there for me and comfort me when I'm struggling. One piece, which is called Mother's Embrace, which won the Andrews Light Up Award. And then my piece, Hold Me Mother Before I Disappear, which was lucky enough to be on the cover of their calendar for 2021 and be a part of that with obviously 11 other great artists.
How exciting. How did that feel when you found out you were going to be on the cover?
Really a bit surreal. It was really exciting and a bit nerve-wracking. And I guess it most of all felt really validating, and that what I'm making is something that doesn't just hold value to me, but to other people.
Rebecca also has a piece in the This Is Me art exhibition run by Carers Queensland. It's a celebration of the achievements and talents of people with disability, from professional artists right through to work from kids. It's a touring exhibition, and we've just delivered it to the Banana Shire Regional Art Gallery in Billawheeler, where it's going to be on show until early March. Rebecca's even sold the piece that she had involved in the exhibition, a realistic depiction of three salmon called Even in Death.
Yes, my father had caught three fish and taken a photo of them for me to paint, and I painted it without knowing why, but just I felt very drawn to it, and it kind of came up with the idea afterwards that it was kind of about life and death and the death of kind of the person that I was before I was diagnosed with chronic illness and mental illness, and has kind of allowed me to, I guess, mourn the person that I was through drawing something that is probably a bit morbid, but it's kind of going through the same life-death cycle.
That's how it felt? It felt like a grieving, like a loss, that process of getting diagnosed?
Yes, I spent a long time, well, through all of my teenage years, going to doctors and trying to work out what's wrong. And because I was never given a definitive answer, I was given the diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome, which is a diagnosis by exclusion. So it was never really a definitive, this is what you have. So it took me years and years of learning that I've lost the person that I was in regards to my physicality and being able to move and just do things and walk and shower with unassisted, and kind of realizing that I've lost that part of me, but now there's the birth of something new and a new way of living with trying to learn to accept my situation opens up a whole world of different ways I can try to help myself with accessibility and learning how to live again in a new way.
One of the things that, for instance, came up when I was speaking to Barb Cook, who is a lady who was diagnosed well into adulthood with autism, was that finally getting the diagnosis, she found the answers and the community and things starting to make sense. But was that a bit unsatisfying that you didn't really have those answers yet?
Incredibly. It was really hard and, you know, 7 or 8 years of just feeling like all the pieces aren't in place. And knowing that there's something wrong with me, but kind of, I guess, the medical community saying you'll grow out of it, or, you know, all teenage girls have low blood pressure. So, you know, just because you're passing out, like, that's fine. If it happens a few more times, then we'll worry. It's just kind of being told that you're not sick enough. It's not sick enough to worry about. And yet I was still not able to go to school and not able to live a so-called normal life.
Where are you at now? Do you feel like you've got the answers now, or is it still feeling a bit vague?
I think we finally worked it all out. It took about 5 years with the diagnosis of chronic fatigue to then realize that this whole time I've been having irritable bowel syndrome quite severely, which is obviously impacting the fatigue side of things. And then this year, the diagnosis of bipolar disorder, I guess, tied it all together and realized that also how much of a connection there is between the brain and the gut and fatigue, and hopefully now working on all parts of it isolated, that it can kind of start to feel a little bit more calm.
And has expressing yourself through art or through music, through craft, has that helped as you've been going through that journey?
I think it was the only thing that kept me going. Feeling like I had something to put my energy and my thoughts, and especially my feelings into, made it feel like if I had something that came out of it that was good, made me feel like it was worth the struggle and worth going through the pain, especially the emotional pain that I have been having with the bipolar. It made it feel like even though this is something really hard and I don't want to handle it, at least I'm getting something creative out of it in the end.
If you're late diagnosed or you acquire a disability later in life, that can bring a need to reevaluate who you are and what that means for you. It can also mean unpicking a lot of internalised ableism, negative ideas about disability you might have unconsciously picked up even if you have disability yourself.
I still struggle with the idea of identifying as disabled because I feel like that's offensive to people with more visible disabilities, but then I acknowledge that other people with invisible disabilities are, it's just as important for them to have a community and to be able to identify as that. So kind of gatekeeping myself and listening to other people that say, you know, you're not sick enough or you're not disabled enough to be able to identify as something. It's just kind of working through that, and I still have a lot of internalized ableism about, it's taken a long time for me to let myself use disability aids, and because I just thought that I should be able to behave like every other healthy person because you'll be all right, it's not that bad.
And there is a lot of unlearning in there, and you think you might intellectually know it, but you don't emotionally understand it yet. I was well into my 30s when I suddenly had a revelation that not being able to stand on one leg isn't a moral failing on my part, which sounds ridiculous, but it was something I genuinely felt quite ashamed of. So there is the most ridiculous little bits of internalized ableism, and it does take a long time to unpick that.
Yeah, I got a long way to go, but it's just kind of learning, you know, that it's okay if I can't stand up to shower. That's okay. And just because I have a fluctuating illness and disability, that doesn't mean that it's fake or not real or all in my head. And I think for a lot of other people watching, if I can get up on stage and perform 1 week and then be really debilitated and stuck in bed the next, to that they think it's not real or it's not, I'm not sick enough, but it is real. We are very mean to ourselves, and especially if doctors or family or friends have said those things to you about you not being sick enough, or at least you're not in a wheelchair, which is a whole nother horrible thing in regards to how would somebody in a wheelchair feel about you, comparing, you know, going, oh, well, that's worst case scenario. How would they feel anyway? I think there's a lot of learning to do and a lot of unlearning to do.
Where would you like to go from here? So your idea is to head back to study next year. You're working on a diploma of visual arts. Do you have a plan, or is it a take one day at a time situation at the moment?
It's funny, because I used to be the kind of person, like when I was 12, where I'd plan everything. By the time I was 12, I planned what my formal dress was going to be, and that I was going to go to NIDA, and I tried to work out all the expenses when I was 12, working out the expenses of living in Sydney, and then that kind of all got blown out, and I realized it's taken a really long time, but to realize that it's sometimes important just to live day by day, and that I have a few things that are goals, and I would love to do a few market stalls in the new year, and I'd love to enter a few art competitions. But if I am physically or mentally unable to meet those deadlines, that there's always another opportunity.
Yeah. Speaking of the market stalls, this is really keen, because not only is it a means of creating something, but then actually potentially having a product, you can go and it can become a business in itself. So could you tell us a bit about Tutti Frutti Handmade?
My mum and I decided that we would work together to create some products, especially around crochet, when she had to leave work to look after me. I've gradually become steadier with my health, and so we were able to kind of work together on creating things and coming up with designs. And I had always had a dream of making earrings like Luna from Harry Potter, and first tried when I was 13, and now finally by the time I'm 20, I managed to make a pair, not radishes, but strawberries, and then, you know, wearing them around and expressing myself through some quirky accessories, I realized that there was a lot of other people that really enjoyed them too. So hopefully working together and helping each other out, we'll be able to grow as a business and as a personal relationship.
And markets are great in that you can go when you're well and when you have the energy, and then it's not, you haven't got a shop front, you haven't committed to being available 8 till 5, 5 days a week. You can, to some extent, plan around your health.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, if on the day I'm really unwell, I can always look to my sister or my mum or my boyfriend to be able to actually man the stall for me. And it's kind of taken a bit of prior planning and starting, you know, a month in advance of making things to make sure that, you know, I've had a few bouts of migraines and things. So trying to work around that and know that if I got started early on, that even when I had issues come up, that there'll still be a lot of progress made.
How important has it been to have that community around you too, particularly your mum, by the sound of it? She's been really important.
It's been really good. I don't know where I would be without those people, like my family and my boyfriend, and especially meeting my boyfriend when I was in a manic episode and didn't know, because I didn't have my diagnosis yet, and kind of having that relationship and getting the diagnosis while we were together and him staying with me and working things out with me, that's been a really important relationship, to know that I was lovable before this diagnosis and I still am lovable with the diagnosis. There's a YouTuber, Jessica Kellgren-Rosard, who talks about her wife being constantly referred to as a saint for being with her, and how negative that is, and how that continues to perpetuate the ableism and the idea that in order for somebody to be with someone with a disability, they must be just beyond human, because it must just be so hard. But really, they're just two people that appreciate each other and love each other, and that's a beautiful thing.
Thanks for joining us at Choice and Control, a Carers Queensland podcast. For more information about Carers Queensland, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, or the local area coordination program, please contact us online at carersqld.com.au. Or you can catch up with us on Facebook, search for Carers Queensland NDIS. This podcast is a place for people with disability to share experiences, stories, and achievements. If you have a story you think we should know about, please contact us through the Carers Queensland Inquiries line at 1300 999 636 or email cq.inquiries@ndis.gov.au. Until next time, thanks for listening.